Hello, long time no see, and welcome back to Absurdity, where we discuss all things absurd in religion, culture, and society. My name is Ryan Becker, and I'm joined by my devilishly handsome co-host, Henry Johnson. Henry, it has been far too long, not since I've seen you, but since we've done this.
Correct.
Yeah.
Because life just happens.
Yeah, and life, you know, just finds a way, and that's just how things tend to go.
I didn't know we were channeling our inner Goldblum here. I feel like I should be going do 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 do.
Yeah, to be fair, my inner Goldblum is not that great.
Are you practicing Tai Chi?
No, see that in what was the one that like every teenage guy in America eventually? Oh, Christopher Walken. Everyone thinks they have a Christopher Walken impression, and then they get into full blown arguments. I've almost seen friendships end over who has a better Walken impression, and so I'm glad I'm out of that phase of my life as well. But it has been a while. It's been a couple months since we've been back recording, and so we wanted to do a special episode for those of you that are so invested in and want to know what's been going on with us. We're still going to be releasing a normal episode alongside this, so don't worry for those of you that want to know just literally what is what is going on in the world that we want to discuss. That episode also exists, but we want to give an update for where we've been. So,
and to clarify, this is not another one because we promised the last time. This is not another apology like, oh my goodness, we let the podcast fall apart, because spoiler alert, both of us have full-time jobs because unlike some YouTube sensations, as sensational as we are, we do not have patron support that allows this to be a full-time job. So this is something we cram in after all the other hours we're doing trying to eat.
Yep. And that's just facts. And I'm okay with that reality. I like doing this for a hobby. And I think somewhere along the way, I kind of lost sight of that years ago. And so I did promise a couple months ago as well, or several months ago, that we wouldn't be running another ad on the show. And I intend to keep that. And so if you do want to support what we're doing, you're welcome to visit us at patreon.com/absurdnetwork, because we are a part of the Absurd Podcast Network, which is a network that I founded. So yeah, that's that. But a lot has happened with both of us in the last 2 months, enough so that you would be shocked to like, what? How did that much happen in 2 months? But
yeah, this is a pretty intense disappearance.
Yes, it is. And once you know, you'll understand exactly why. Nothing terrible that I can point to, which is good. It's all, I think, good updates for the most part. And that makes me really happy to say as well. But Henry, I'd love to start with you and what's been going on with your life.
So we can save the best for last.
Yes. Well, I actually thought we'd start with the best so that they actually stay watching long enough to actually potentially hear my side.
Okay,
you see, you like that flip?
I can't give it away, but he has already failed in something.
Nah, you know,
that could really hurt you down the line.
That's a little teaser.
Let's just put it this way. Both of these things are quite dangerous. Just one is long-term and one is more immediate.
Yes, exactly. So yeah, Henry, tell us about what's been going on in your life.
Well, I've been doing a lot of work, moving into the holidays, obviously, but the main thing he's looking at and why we had banked episodes, to be fair, trying to cover this, but then just life got crazy. I went to airborne jump school.
So, yeah, which is a totally normal thing that people do.
No, it's not. there is nothing normal about it. I have a whole new appreciation for this. And it's still funny to me that they call it jump school, because like me, you know, when I was ignorant and uninitiated, I thought, okay, you jump out of airplanes. And yet when I got there, they immediately start drilling into your head, you do not jump from the airplane. If you jump from the airplane, you are going to really hurt yourself. You step out of the airplane, which most people would say that is the dumbest thing I've heard anyway, because you're at a high altitude and you're just going out of an airplane. And I need to clarify something. I have never skydived. I've never had a desire to do that. I have never stepped off of a perfectly good airplane unless it was connected to a jet bridge or some sort of ladder system. And I was traveling somewhere commercially until this. So I went into jump school with absolutely never having put a parachute on, never having gone out the door of a perfectly good airplane in flight, yet alone at 1,500 feet, flying at 150 miles an hour. And, you know, immediately starting at terminal velocity. So yeah, it's a crazy experience. Shout out to the black hats, as we call them, and these are your instructors. There's two key terms that we usually use, the black hats and the red hats, at least in my training program. Your black hats are your instructors. These are the guys that have done this forever. I'll try not to use names, but there's one instructor that if you have been through Benning, you will know who this guy is. And he has trained, I think he was making some comment at the end of the program, because they don't talk to you buddy-buddy during the program, because you're not their friend, right?
No, of course not.
But he's trained like something like 14,000 paratroopers
Wild.
So far going through Benning. I can't imagine that many, but he knows his stuff if he's gone through that.
Oh, yeah.
But anyway, these are the black hats. They're instructing you and all this stuff so that you stay alive, or at least have the best chance to stay alive. Because the funny thing is, they will do as much as they can on the ground, but once you go out the door of an aircraft, it's between you, your training, and God. Mm-hmm. You know, there's nothing the Army can do for you to help you once you go out the door. Only when you go splat on the ground or something goes. But anyway, there's that, and then there's the red hats, and those are like God, basically, to the airborne, because those are your riggers. Okay, these are the people that test your chutes, pack your chutes, put everything in. Your life is literally in their hands. You will give them anything they ask for.
Yep.
I mean, you just look at these people and like, yes. There is no, there is just yes. But anyway, it's three weeks. Ground phase is, you know, the longest, because they want to train you the most they can on the ground. It's probably wise.
That's valid. Yeah, I was going to say that seems like a good place to start, you know?
Yes. And I will just say, without boring the minute detail for all of this, PLF, or parachute landing fall pit, is the bane of your existence those weeks. Because the first thing they have to really teach you, among a billion things they're teaching you, is something very unnatural for humanity, and that is to fall on purpose. Right? I mean, because since you're a kid, everything in you is like, don't fall, it hurts. And they have to teach you not only to fall, but to fall on purpose, and don't break your fall, or you will break something.
Yeah. Well, this is, and that's an important skill I learned BMXing when I was a teenager. Like, if you're a skateboarder or a BMXer, one of the most important things you learn is how to fall correctly so that you don't hurt yourself. Like the skateboarder at the X Games several years ago who went on the mega ramp, which is like the giant gap within like a 30-foot quarter pipe that they go off. And he went up, so he made the mega ramp and did his big trick, and then he went up the quarter pipe, and then I guess he came too far off. He ended up falling basically from about 70 feet up, just, or 50 feet up, just straight flat on the ground. And you see him flail, and then you see him completely go limp before he hits the ground. Because if your muscles are relaxed when you hit the ground and on impact, it actually lessens your chance of injury. Within a couple minutes, he with medical assistance, he got up and he walked out with just a few bruises. And I think he maybe had a broken rib. That was it. But it was mostly just like bruises, and he walked out. Learning how to fall is like critical, but to do that and do it on purpose.
Well, yes. And it's crazy because everything in your mind says this does not make sense, that I would not get hurt. And it's all mental. There's so much about jump school. I realized when I went in uninitiated, my great fear was the physical aspect of it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, cause I've never been quote the bad shape, you know, but skinny does not mean fit, right? And I had learned a lot about that prepping physically to go through this. But even when you get there, there's still that nervousness. I'm like, am I physically gonna, you know, make it through this? And honestly, my greatest fear was my knees, because I have, as I've gotten older, I've had certain tweaks that happen to my knees, and there's certain times I can hit it where fluid starts building up behind one of them, and I'm just like, oh no, now I'm going to this thing where you're landing on your feet and your knees. And I had this misconception. I'm like, everything's all the tension on your knees. And I know all these airborne guys, their knees are like shot, and it does impact your knees. But if you do it right, it's a totally different ball game.
Yeah.
And so needless to say, other than like bruises on top of bruises on top of bruises on my knees themselves, I don't remember any fluid buildups and things. I didn't have any of that. But you're learning, really, your knees are not what take your impact. If they do, you just broke your legs, right?
Oh, yeah, at that speed and height.
Because here's the thing. This probably would, if you haven't figured it out by now, people can YouTube, I'm sure. Military parachuting is not the same as skydiving or civilian parachuting. For one, the chute is different. 2, the speed is different. 3, the method of exit is different. 4, the speed on impact is there's just so
well, you're not doing it as primarily a tool for fun, like a hobby. You're doing it A, for survival, but B, for a mission. Like, you're doing it with a very specific objective in mind whenever you do have to jump.
Yeah, and the weird thing is like skydiving, the point is to be in the air.
Yeah.
Right? It's the free fall that's the fun in it, right? So you will go up to certain heights. It's like 10 to 14,000 feet, and depending on where in there you are, you get 45 seconds to like a minute of free fall. Mm-hmm. And that's what people are paying for. That's the experience they want. In a military application, the longer you are in the air, the worse for you. For two reasons. One, because you could be shot at. Or 2, they can see where you're going, right? Which means then they can make their way to shoot at you.
And also because you're jumping from a low altitude anyway, typically. So, you know, the longer you're in the air, it's problematic. Or at least that you're not, the longer you're in free fall, it's problematic, I should say.
Well, yes, in that sense too, because we go out at 1,500 feet. Standard static line jump is 1,500 feet. Now, to put that into some perspective, if you're trying to do math in your head, imagine about the height of the Empire State Building. Go to the top of the Empire State Building and then just step off the building. Okay.
Don't actually do that.
That's why they have grates and fences up there. Yeah. I've been on that observation deck or whatever. But here's my point with that. It seems like a lot, but it's not. Okay, because there's this little thing called terminal velocity, right? And they will teach you all of this because, long story short, jump school is like, I can tell they know what they're doing.
Duh.
But they've had decades to perfect this since at least airborne operations in World War II in the 40s. But they have this system down. You would do like 3 hours in the pit, and just when you thought physically you, and by pit, I mean there was this area that you practice these landing falls, because it's much easier to do it in sand than it is on the hard ground. Like, let's just start by hitting the ground over and over again. It still hurts, but anyway. And they do that just to about the time you thought you couldn't physically take it anymore. Then they'd shove you in a classroom for 3 hours. And then they would beat you up emotionally because it's emergency procedures course, and you find out all 900 ways you could die.
Yeah.
Right? And how you need to prevent that. Like, you know, side note, totally random story, you do have to learn how to survive hitting power lines.
Oh, yes, you do. That that's valid too.
Well, yes. But the random story I'm going to give, there was one guy in the cadre, one student that was going through this, who actual name will remain nameless. He wasn't in my direct cadre, my platoon. But the first two jumps he did, I don't know how he landed in power lines both times.
That is precision, not aim, everybody. That is
that's not even precision. And here's what's funny. The second time he landed in the power lines in such a way that he cut off all the power to the nearby town.
Oh my word.
To the base for 4 hours until the power company shut it all, you know, got him out of that. And so his nickname for the rest of the course was Sparky. So we called him Sparky because
he survived both.
That is true. He survived both. So the training worked, I guess. But I don't know how twice. The DIs were chewing him out for anyway. Funny story anyway. And thankfully that was not me, but the nickname was Sparky on that.
And now he can run really, really fast.
Yeah, like, you're welcome. Flash.
Yes, there you go. Yep.
Yes. All right. So speeding this up, you do your ground phase. The most interesting thing that guys that have been through it, gals that have been through it, will probably tell you about there is suspended agony. That's a nickname term for it. You do emergency procedures training. Again, they want to do as much as they can on the ground before you're actually up in the air. And so you need to practice the harness being in the parachute harness as if you were descending under canopy without actually being under canopy. And so they have these rigs that are hooked up to the ceiling of the installation where they're doing this. And they will actually have these mobile stair units, and you will walk up and get hooked up into this thing and then lift your legs, and they'll pull the stairs away. And now you're hanging like 5 feet off the ground in a harness. Now, why we call it suspended agony is because in real life, if you're in a canopy coming down, you feel weightless actually. You don't feel the canopy because the harness, you, the canopy mm-hmm. should all be moving with the weight. It's moving with gravity. You're all moving as one unit. Well, obviously on the ground, if you're in this harness and it's hooked to the ceiling, it doesn't move, but your body still wants to go to the ground. And they hook you in this thing and they leave you there until their course of instruction is done. So imagine a whole bunch of people hanging in fake harnesses. Well, not fake, but you know what I mean. They're hooked to a ceiling. And your DIs are walking around, you know, your black hats are all walking around on the ground and you're just hanging there. And after a couple hours of you hanging in this thing, you're losing blood circulation in your legs because of the way this
yep.
thing is, you know, you're trying to pull it. So that's why they call it suspended agony. You are suspended from the ceiling, mm-hmm. but you're in agony by the time this thing's done, as you are practicing over and over again all your emergency procedures, demonstrating how to get out of the harness, because believe it or not, and again, if there's anybody listening that's been through jump school, you know all this, and PTSD is coming back. I don't know. Right. There's different, you can't even exit the harness the same way depending on what emergency you're in, because there's different things you would never think of. Or at least I didn't, but I'm glad. I'm very thankful to the black hats.
Well, yeah, unfortunately, it likely means that someone found out the hard way, and now they know how to deal with it.
Correct. And then, of course, I could tell stories about the Tower of Terror. And I don't mean the Disney's Hollywood Studios ride. I'm talking about, you know, the military has orchestrated a tower, because now you'll go up in a tower and go off of it to practice height and whatever. And the military has found a way to perfectly orchestrate the psychological height that it needs to be just tall enough that when you look over, you think, I will die if I go off of this platform. It's too high. If something goes mm-hmm. wrong, I will just go splat. But it's just low enough, you go, but I might survive falling from this height. And your mind can't figure out which option it is, and it just mentally overloads you.
Yeah, and that's pretty much all of jump school and paratrooping in general, is it's a mental game. Like,
and that's the biggest takeaway I hit. You know, I thought it was going to be the physical going in, but it's totally the psychological component is harder. Mm. And you will realize that the moment you start doing your first jumps, right? And that's probably a good way to start segueing out of this. When you get on the airplane, I remember there was, you know, this is also unnatural to go out of a perfectly good airplane and do this. And, you know, the doors open, you hear the wind, you're just, yep. you know. And you've got to now step out of this thing. And I used to wonder, to airborne qualify, to earn your jump wings, you have to go out of this aircraft 5 times. And I used to go, why 5? Wouldn't 1 in successfully doing it prove you can do it? Well, now I know why it's 5, because the first one, the only way I got out the door, I know, was training and adrenaline. I do not remember a ton about the first jump. It was literally, I was going through motions and just boom. Of course, it didn't help. I was the number one in the stick.
Oh, fantastic.
If you've been through jump school, you know what that means. But basically, when you're prepping, there is somebody that has to stand in the door. That's what we call it. All right, it's one of the commands. But you stand in the door and you're waiting for the jump master to whack you in the rear, and you step out and you start the whole train of guys going out. And just the way they weighted or proportioned it or however they determined it, the very first jump, I was the number one guy and the number one stick, which meant for what felt like an eternity when they got to the point, they were like, stand in the door, getting ready for the light to change and for us to go over the DZ, the drop zone. I was standing in a door of an aircraft, hearing the loud blare of the engine, whatever, my foot a few inches off the side, and there's nothing but sky in front of me. And I am staring at the wingtip, because again, if you go to jump school, you know, do not look down. Wherever you look is where your body's going. And the first 3 seconds of exiting the aircraft will dictate the rest of your journey. You can screw it up then and you're done for.
Yeah.
Right. It all depends. Physics is doesn't care about you or your feelings or where you look. Mm-hmm. But you're standing there and you realize that the moment you feel that hit, this isn't training on the ground. I'm not going out and landing on a bouncy pad or whatever. I'm just going out into nothing. And it was all adrenaline. It was purely adrenaline. And each successive jump, your mind has a little bit less of that. And so you at least process a little bit more. And oh my goodness, I got more and more nervous each jump that went. It was weird. The third jump was the hardest for me. Totally psychologically was just messing with me, because now you've done this a couple times and you're like, why are you doing this?
Yeah.
Right. And your body's kind of like psyching itself out. Like you survived the other two statistically. You're like, you're due for a malfunction. You're due for, why are you doing this? The more you do this is the disaster. And to prove this point, there was a guy in my particular platoon, again, will remain nameless, but he was like a state trooper. Okay. So like his full-time job is like facing death every day. I mean, he was fit, like on the ground phase, like he was running like circles around mm-hmm. us. Like this guy was, you know, mid to late 20s, built like a triangle. I mean, the guy was like, he made it look easy. We got on the airplane for the first jump. And when they gave the command to stand up, he was frozen in place in the seat. He could not stand up. They failed him out the course. And that's not judging him by any means. I don't mean to be like, ha, 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 ha. I'm just trying to explain the psychological nature of this. We lost more people in jump phase than we did ground phase.
Mm.
And we lost a ton after the first jump. Like there was guys that went out the first time and then they could not bring themselves to get back on a plane to do it again. And they just washed them out.
Mm.
And I totally get it. Now the psychological component of it is, now to say something nice in conclusion for people are like, why in the world? Listen, there's about 10 seconds because you don't stay in the air very long in military jump operations. The first 4 seconds you're deploying, we're on a static line. Now, what that means is the tray pack that your chute is in, it's not actually the chute itself connected to this, is connected to a cable we call the static line in the aircraft. And when you go out, it's still hooked to the aircraft. So as you fall away from the aircraft, it eventually deploys the chute for you. This isn't like skydiving. There's nothing I pull a lever and it, pulls out. Well, at 1,500 feet and at terminal velocity, if you're falling at that speed, within the first 4 seconds, you've already eaten up a third of your travel to the ground. But you're going to eat that up anyway because it takes about that long if everything goes right for the chute to deploy.
Mm.
Now, assuming everything goes well and the chute deploys and I'm not immediately having to deploy what I call the egg. Well, I didn't call it that. Some of the instructors did, but it's the reserve chute.
Yeah.
We wear it on the front, but they were always like, protect the egg.
That makes sense.
You've been through jump school, you would know what I'm talking about. Anyway, if you don't have to deploy that, everything's good and you're going, you're turning into the wind, whatever. There's about 10 seconds of free fall before you're preparing for your landing. Mm. Okay. If everything goes well, you're probably on the ground in less than 20 seconds, 25 seconds at most. I mean, it's not long. You're not just hanging out there like, well, look at this guy. But for the 10 seconds you can do that, I don't know how to describe that feeling unless you've been. It's so weird. You go from all the loud, emotionally adrenaline pumped chaos to stepping out into the prop blast into this like hurricane force winds. Right, you step out into that. You fall away, and again, it doesn't feel like a roller coaster. I was actually nervous about that. If you've been on a roller coaster and when it drops initially and you feel your stomach going, I hate that feeling. It wasn't like that at all. It felt more like kind of going down a slide on the playground.
I
don't know how to describe it other than that. It's kind of, you know, you're descending, but it's not like that gut feeling of like, and I think part of that, again, they tried to explain that to us is like on a roller coaster, it's your body's going from slow to accelerate. And so that feeling you get is that the outer part of your body starts accelerating slightly faster than your internals.
Mm-hmm.
And everything's trying to keep up and you get that weird sensation. On an airplane, obviously, we're decelerating because the plane is going much faster than terminal velocity. And when you step off the airplane, now I'm no longer going 150 miles an hour.
Gotcha.
I'm slowing. So therefore, your body's actually slowing, not speeding up. So you don't get that feeling. But anyway, it's like you're going down a slide. And when the chute unfurls and the aircraft goes away because it's still moving, so it keeps disappearing. There's a bit where it is the most pristine silence I have ever heard in my life.
Mm.
I don't describe it other than that. It is deadly quiet. There's no noise pollution up there. I mean, you can yell to a guy way over the thing and you can have a conversation. It's so quiet. And you just hear nothing. You don't hear wind because if you've done your duty right and turned into the wind, you're moving with the wind. So you don't even feel the air, you know, blowing by you or anything. It's just stillness.
Mm.
And you're hovering between heaven and earth and you're just looking at everything. And I remember our first jump was near sunset, and that's the most beautiful sunset I've seen in my life. And you're just hovering. It just feels like you're just floating. And for those 10 seconds, it's absolutely amazing. But then the ground is coming up at you very fast. And now you got to launch into your prepare to land, and you made sure you've turned into the wind, and you're orienting for a right PLF or front left PLF or rear right or rear left, whatever you get to choose depending on weather conditions. And then boom, you're on the ground, and then you're up and you're trying to outrun your chute so it doesn't become a giant parasail and drag you 30 miles an hour across the ground through somebody's field or whatever, et cetera. But that 10 seconds is like divine.
Oh yeah.
Now for me, at least, I don't know if everything getting up to going out the aircraft and the landing part on either side of that sandwich makes that 10 seconds worth it. But if I had to say, like, what's the highlight? It's like that moment is like, boom. And then, of course, the adrenaline when you're standing on the ground and your chute's all pulled up and you realize, I survived.
Yeah, right.
The first one, I was giddy. I probably looked like a drunk. I think all of us were. Well, we were on the DZ. And we've gotten all our stuff, and we're running back to the trucks to get off the DZ, and we're like, we're alive.
I love it.
We were up there, and we just came down, and we're here, we're alive.
I wonder what the breaking even point is, like where you've done it enough times that now it's just normal. Like you don't have that kind of same feeling. Or if there's always like a little bit of that feeling, but you just learn to, you know, deal with it and move on with your life.
I'm going to assume, and again, this is a guy that at this point has not done like 30, 60, 90. I had to do just the basics. I had to get through school. Okay, that's only 5. I will have to recert and other stuff. But I'm just assuming from people I've talked to or the instructors, because they get a little bit more friendly after you graduate. You can ask them a bit more stuff. And they were like, there's always in the back of your mind, statistically, the longer you do this, there will be a malfunction somewhere.
Yep.
That's inevitable. No matter how well they do this equipment, no matter how what statistically, you will have a malfunction. And so they're like, I would assume there's always going to be in the back of your mind. I don't know if you ever get comfortable with it. And in fact, they were made the comment, if you are comfortable with it, you're asking for trouble. There should always be that hesitation. There should always be that a little bit of concern. That alertness is what keeps you alive.
Yeah. Right?
If you're just like, ha ha, I got this. That's when you make mistakes. That's when you do something really stupid. Your head's not in the game. And you will hurt yourself. And in fact, you know, there was a guy who didn't keep his head in the game on one of our jumps, and he exited improper because he was just, I don't know what, I'm not in his head, whatever. And now thankfully he remembered his emergency training and it kicked in and that saved his life, but it hurt him. He got hurt really bad. And again, they use that as another time. Remember, if you don't keep your head in the game, you're asking to kill yourself.
And that's
right.
That's because, yeah. That's just how it is.
I mean, you have more time than you think once you're out the plane, but you have less time than you would want.
That makes sense.
If that makes any sense.
Yeah, it does.
If you follow your training, you're not like, oh, there's a malfunction, and you're running and freaking out.com and acting lstupido.org, because then you'll also get yourself killed.
Yeah, when you also combine that with like military combat on the ground once you're there and all the like the a mission actually in real life, which once again I can't speak to any of that from any sort of personal or third party experience. I'm just wondering, like, you have to get out of the I survived the jump phase really quick at some point. And I'm wondering how many times you do it before you can actually, which I'm sure it changes for everyone, but do you see what I'm saying there? Like, maybe not that it's normal or just like a normal day out, but more so just like you hit the ground and now you have you have what's in front of you still to go.
Well, and I would assume, and I need to clarify that, this is something a lot of the vets will say, and I now totally get it. They're like, just because you went through jump school does not make you a paratrooper. It makes you jump qualified.
Mm.
And the difference they would say with that is, so, you know, I say paratrooper, but I don't really, a paratrooper, someone they've been shooting at. You see, I didn't go out the airplane with somebody shooting at me. For all the stuff I had to think about, I didn't have to worry about getting killed before I even hit the ground. And I didn't have that worry, like you said, that once I got on the ground and that exhilaration of like, aha, I'm alive. I'm not immediately being shot at, artilleryed, you know, strafed, whatever. I don't have any of those concerns. My concern was trees, water, power lines.
Yeah. Right?
Exit correctly. That's all my focus. So I would assume, and this is the uninitiated me, that your mind would have so many other things you'd be worried about. Oh, and then there was my camera.
Right at 30 minutes every time. I love it.
Right at every time.
Oh, now we see your shutter speed settings. He's back. Yes.
Anyway, I'm back. That's telling me stop. Anyway, it's telling me you've gone too long. But that would be my thing. I would assume the combat aspect of it would predominate your mind, but I've never been in combat to know.
Yeah.
Right. I would assume you get on the ground and you've probably been more worried the whole time about what's in front of you than just I got to the ground. It's like it's just part of the process to the inevitable thing that sucks.
Yeah.
And I hope I never have to do that. And I applaud people that did. But anyway, that is a very non-technical, totally rambling, whatever. That's jump school. I survived it. I'm jump qualified. Not a paratrooper, I guess is a good way to close it. But I am jump qualified, and that is a completely different. I have a whole new appreciation for a lot of things in life now through it. And so it's crazy. I can't believe I did that. It's one of the hardest things I've ever done. But you feel a sense of accomplishment like, I've done it.
Yep.
And I will enjoy the ground until the next time I have to do it.
That's right. And if you are interested in hearing more of Henry's stories, just let us know. We'd love to share those with you. And I'm sure he would love to share some of the things that he's learned, because there's so much more even than what he shared here. When we caught up, the day that you left, basically, was I saw you later that night, and we talked for probably 2-3 hours just on jump school stuff. And
I drove past your house on the way going home from it.
Yeah.
So yeah.
And so yeah, we'd love to share those with you, but we don't want to take up, you know, the whole show with those either. But
now for the cherry on top.
That's right.
Ryan, what's been happening in your, what did you step out into?
Yes.
Hurricane force wind style?
So speaking of suspended agony, well, first, I've been waiting and desperate to show this, but many of you know,
why don't you just stretch and you've, for us?
No, it's actually something different. So behind me on the top shelf are a few of my collection, but one of the most recent things I collect is yo-yos. For those who don't know, I don't know anything good enough to like do something on camera. Yes, we're leading with this. And I was on some yo-yo forums looking through yo-yos that are bought and that people are reselling or looking to trade or whatever. And because yo-yos typically are limited run or limited production run for like a specific colorway, or you know, you'll wait another year before they may release again, or that yo-yo in particular may never release again. And as I was looking through them, I discovered someone was selling a yo-yo that only 30 of them were made. I did not know about this until literally I was on this forum post. Only 30 of them were made. It was a one-time collaboration in January of 2020. And the yo-yo is literally called Absurdity, which is wild to me. And I immediately felt like if I don't buy this yo-yo, I will be betraying
it's a cardinal.
Yep, I will be betraying the entire universe. So I reached out to the guy and was like, hey, you know, he was selling it for $90. I was like, let me, you know, can I get it from you? He goes, well, actually, I decided I'd rather keep it actually, because I hit my income goal with what I needed with the other yo-yos I just sold. But I know of another guy on a private forum who's also on this forum. I'll let him know to message you because he's selling his too. 2 out of the 30 yo-yos were selling at the same time. And so the other guy reached out to me that same night, and now I have yo-yo number 24 out of 30. It is pink, and it's probably not going to show very well, but on the inside it does actually say Absurdity as well. Yeah. And it's just really cool. The box underneath actually says 24 of 30 as well. So I just wanted to share that because I could. In addition to my back going out in October, leading me to not be able to record for several weeks at the same time that Henry was at jump school too, and on top of the fact that most of our backup episodes that we had banked up were now out of date. We had one on General Milley and his statements regarding critical race theory. We had and about the Miami Tower collapse in like, I don't know, June, July, whenever that was.
So much has happened.
I know, right? Those aren't relevant anymore, so I'm not going to post them. Like, it just seems weird to have a take that talks about the articles, you know, 3 days ago when it was 5 months ago. So we've just kind of said, well, that's that. But in addition,
poor podcast exit, they just went splat.
Yes. In addition to both of those, I also got a new job, and now I work full-time from home. I did not start anything new. It was nothing like that. It was more so I found an amazing company called Sweetfish Media, and we produce podcasts for B2B brands through a method of content-based networking that our CEO coined the term and wrote a book on it as well. And basically, we work with brands that market to other brands and help them develop a podcast as a part of their marketing strategy. And so I've been since November 18 going through training for that and have really, this company is absolutely amazing, fully remote from the ground up. And it's based in Orlando, which is where I'm from. So that was also just a sense of personal, kind of a personal connection. But the thing I'm the most proud of with this is it is a full-time job in the podcasting space, but mainly the marketing space. And the reason that I'm so proud of it is because this was a job I got based off of a resume that was purely created from things I've done in my spare time in addition to a full-time job. My degree, my work experience full-time isn't as related to podcast marketing as you would, as one would hope. And I never really expected to be able to land a full-time job with the resume I had. Because there really isn't much I can say. I don't have a formal education in it, and but I have 5 years of experience doing it on my own, helping launch over 40 podcasts, running Absurdity for 170 some odd episodes so far, and doing others as well. And in that time, have grown my knowledge just significantly, both on podcasting as a medium and on how to do it. And I'm really proud of it because it's that earned me a job. And it really does speak a lot to the long-term nature of the things that we do that we're passionate about. Because I found a company that I feel like really values me and that I really like the way that they work together. I keep waiting for the other shoe to drop because there's so many amazing things about working for this company. But and don't get me wrong, I'm sure there are going to be things that are, you know, cause a source of friction and things that I don't like either. But it really is from the intentionality they have working full time remote to some of the benefits they get to the scale of the work I'm doing. I mean, I spent the first 15 minutes of my initial interview talking about what kind of what space in podcasting I like working in and the mentoring and coaching side, and then with the position that I was applying for, the last 5 minutes of that initial job interview were spent talking about the fact that they were going that exact direction with the position I was applying for. I mean, it could not have been, I was trying not to get my hopes up, but right when that happened, I was like, cool, my hopes are up. There's nothing I can do about it. I had no control.
I remember us talking about it on that same strip. I mean, you were finishing the interview or having the final interview right as I was coming back from jump school. It's interesting these stories intersect, yeah. Right? And we were sitting on your couch talking about, like, you're like, dude, I really like this, but I don't know. And I'm worried if they're going to call me back.
Yep. And it kicked off an intense 2-3 week period of me trying to wrap things up at my old job. And that was...
You were as busy as jump school.
Yeah, it was. I mean, I was just completely wrapped up in that. And so it's been a wild, wild ride. But so I started that job on November 18, and let me just get a quick stretch. Oh,
he bit the dust, ladies and gentlemen. He has put the ring of power.
I feel better now. Yeah, that was a really good stretch there. But for those that are listening, I got married. That's what happened on November 24. So I proposed in the middle of my back going out. It was completely unromantic, unfortunately, but I did propose in October.
You literally fell for her.
And I literally, I proposed to her in my house. I wanted to do a nice home-cooked dinner, but I was still at a point where I couldn't stand or move for long enough to do that. I still only had about 10 minutes in me standing. And at that point, but we were on a timeline because we had already decided our wedding was going to be on the 24th of November. And so when you're talking about a ring that she doesn't know she has yet, talking about choosing wedding bands, dress, whole nine yards there, there's just so much.
Now, why were you guys so focused on the day before Thanksgiving? So, I should point that out.
So there's a couple
reasons.
There was
a reason for this.
So we talked about this back
in...
Not
just psychosis.
Yeah, right? We talked about this back in August when I first brought up ring shopping, and she... when we talked about life goals and, you know, is there anything we want to wait for? Is there anything that we really are wanting to make sure we hit? One of my closest friends, she wanted to be married before she was 30. She got married 2 weeks before she was 30. That was one of her big things. And that's perfectly fine. And I love her husband. He's a great guy. So I'm all for it. For us, there was no big things. And we realized that both of our families are in financial situations that aren't like amazing. So neither family can afford a big ceremony. Neither of us really wants a big ceremony. And we don't really care about the ceremony to the level of saying we want to wait specifically because of this. And then we realized if we want to save up for a ceremony, why are we paying rent in two different places while trying to save up for a ceremony? And so we decided to do an elopement. And when looking at dates, we decided our 2-year anniversary because I have ADHD and that is one less thing for me to memorize. So it makes it that much worse if I ever forget, but it is on November 24, which is the day before Thanksgiving. Now, the other reason we decided to then commit with that, even though it's so close to a holiday, was because I was asking that neither family be there since my family can't travel from Orlando. They're there for health reasons. They can't, and financial reasons. So I said, look, if my family can't be there, I'm asking that this be specifically a private ceremony. And that was my one request. And her parents honored it. We did have her family drive her. They were with her as she got ready that morning, and they drove her to the site where we got married, which is a dock on our friend Crystalie's property. And so thank you to her and her neighbors as well for accommodating us. And
apologies to any dead fish there might be for swallowing fake rose petals.
Yeah, we didn't think that one through. We had some fake rose petals. We laid them out, and then wind happened, and then we quickly tried to pick as many up as we could. So the reason we did it this way was so that we could celebrate Thanksgiving and celebrate our wedding with her family, and then because her family comes out to Chattanooga where we are, and then we can celebrate in Orlando with my family at Christmas. And so this allows us to do it both on holidays that are really close to each other. We don't have to take extra time off to do it, really. And it is just, it just allows both families to still feel like they were a part of it. And our plan right now is still to do a bigger ceremony next year at some point, but we don't know how that will play out yet. The bigger thing right now is paying down debt and getting ourselves financially secure. But it's great because I work from home now, so I save a ton on gas and maintenance costs. And the other side of that is if we move because she gets a better job somewhere, we can. As long as I have internet, it doesn't really matter to me. And that's just something I'm really incredibly grateful for, that I get to. My job had me traveling a whole ton, and now working from home, and I get time to work on my personal podcast, which is cool. It means that I get to spend my first year of marriage at home as well. And so I am married to my beautiful wife, Natabelle Fortunato, and we are working on the name change documents. I didn't ask her to, I just asked if she wanted to, and that was a decision I've left to her. I understand some of the history behind name changing and the sacrifice that women make when deciding to, or when making that decision. But if it's something that she wanted to do, then I wanted to support it. If not, I would have been totally fine with it. She could still change her mind. We haven't submitted any applications yet. But I'm just, when you have that much life change happening, you know, getting her moved in and all of her stuff in and getting things built out, and it's been an experience. I now went from, you know, owning most of the things in my house and having all of my space to I have basically half of a bed and one rack in a closet. And that's all
they
of my
own
stuff.
The closets.
And that's everything. And it's like, if you walked in, you wouldn't think I lived there other than seeing my side of the bed. That's it. And I'm okay with that. I have no problem with it. It forces me to downsize a bit. And what matters is my studio is relatively untouched as well. I just set up a desk for her to be in here as well when she's home. So yeah, I'm thrilled with all the life changes that I've had going on, but it's been a lot to the point of, I'd love to say I could update everyone on YouTube and social media all the time, but I just had other priorities during that time, which seems like it would be obvious at this point why. And both of us, you know, once again, I can't really tell which is scarier, Henry, your jump certification or me getting married. Those are, me getting married is scary for multiple reasons, just so we're all aware. Number one, it's me. And number two, it's also me. And number three, we question her sanity in choosing me. But
it's horrible because now my hopes of being with you have been dashed.
I know. I know. What's great is
you were my full backup plan when my wife croaked. But now
I got to thank you, because it must have hurt a lot to officiate my wedding and to be standing there seeing me all dressed up, but for somebody else. That must have been a very painful experience for you.
It was rough. And especially when you're on a dock where all it would take is one like complete slap to the side and she would have drowned. I mean,
yeah,
folks. Wow. That's the clip
that
goes
that's
viral.
The one.
No, I'm not advocating drowning or, you know.
But also, I mean, on a serious note, if you're unmarried and listening to this, do not do any brides, please. If you're a photographer, if you're a video, like if you do any sort of media work for weddings, or you are a bride in a wedding, do not do any photos in your gown in water. Wedding dresses are heavy, and brides within the last several years have drowned doing what's the trash to the dress photos shoots. Or there was a story of a bride getting in a stream and doing it, and her dress, the weight was so much they couldn't pull her up, and she got swept away downstream, and they found her I think hours later.
That sunk the conversation.
It is
really
a serious, I know, but that's like, I know it did, but that's a serious thing of like, please don't, if I can save even one life by derailing this conversation with that piece of life advice, I absolutely will. Because that's really important to know. Don't do anything involving water and your dress other than drinking water.
Right. So just stand your bride to be on a dock above
correct.
Water in the winter.
Yes. Exactly. That's what we did. And that worked out really
with a nice backless dress for her.
Yeah, it was, you know, it was great.
Freeze your wife to death before, you know, preserve her in that moment.
Yes.
Just completely.
It's all about refrigeration.
Cryogenic stasis.
Yep. Correct. You understand. If it wasn't, we do it in the summer and I just bring a lot of salt with me. So those are the two options, I think. But so that's where we've been for the last few months. We're really excited about what's coming next. We are going to be a bit more intentional about taking holidays and taking planned breaks instead of unplanned ones. A lot of life just kind of came at us. And I feel like that's just been the way for everyone for the last couple of years. But we haven't gone anywhere. Absurdity isn't going anywhere. We still want to keep doing this and want to keep making content. A, because we're passionate about it. B, because we really like talking to each other. And C, because we've been absolutely in awe at the impact that this show has made on so many people for so many years. And we want to continue to create something that's going to be beneficial and make a really positive difference in the lives of those who listen to it. So for me, this is an act of ministry that now that I'm out of a professional ministry environment, this is something that is a way for me to sustain my ministry heart and my service-minded heart to do something with my voice that I feel matters. And so thank you all for your support, and we're excited to see what is coming next on this show as well, and to go down that journey with you. So Henry, any final words from you as we close out this episode?
Thanks for your patience with us and still wanting to include us in some small part in your life. That means a lot, even in the chaos of ours. We know yours has got to be chaotic too. And the fact that you work us in somehow in the car, exercising, whatever, that means a lot. And we thank you for that. And then second of all, Ryan, congrats again. You've joined a really awesome club. You're going to realize how selfish you are and how much you suck, but in a good way that hopefully, I mean, there's therapy for the other parts where if you really internalize that and think that you are trash, you're not, right? But
I appreciate
you know,
that. Thank you.
You will learn. I'm learning a ton, but it's a journey.
Yeah.
Well worth having. Yeah, especially when it's the right one. And I know you two are, if I didn't think you two were good together, I wouldn't have married you anyway. So, but you know, I did. Thank you for that honor, but I'm really excited for you. And I'm excited to see where both of you land in the future.
Yeah. I thank you, man. I appreciate it. It was really great for both of us to have you there, as the pastor that both of us are closest to. That was something that meant a lot to both of us as well. We didn't want to just do a courthouse thing. We wanted it to be special. So, you helped make it so. And, so with that, everyone, thank you so much for listening and for being a part of our journeys with us and for being patient with us on ours as well. And we'll see you next time.